Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we speak with returning guest, Dr. John Hall. He's an anesthesiologist and will be coming out with a new book soon titled Guinea Pigs, Technology of Control. He's the author of the book A New Breed, Satellite Terrorism in America. And we stumble upon some very interesting things in this interview. But we first get an update from Dane Wigington on his research measuring UV rays, and specifically UVB rays. Dane Wigington, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jeff. As always, thanks for helping us bring additional details on geoengineering to light as they unfold.
Some very interesting research has been conducted by you and some other people. Can you tell us what you've been up to regarding testing for a particular spectral frequency in the UV area?
Well, certainly we knew the UV was ridiculously high because it's burning the bark off of trees, literally. And sometimes people don't really get a clear picture of what I'm saying there. It's literally gone. I mean, we have trees in Northern California, which is part of the really the Pacific Northwest, in forested areas, native trees, even native oaks, that have no bark left. There's core wood showing. It's fried off the south-southwest side of the trees from the bottom to the top. This is not all specimens, but it's many specimens. And in Northern California city of Redding, the trees that looked healthy only a few years ago, well, it's been probably 6, 7, 8 years ago now, trees in parking lots and so forth, the majority of them are cooked to a crisp. There's a few live branches left, one strip of bark left up the backside of the tree. Gardens aren't growing here. Aquatic insect die-off. Lots and lots of things. And we knew from all available science and geoengineering that these particulates shred ozone, period. So we just didn't have the resources to buy the metering equipment until recently. We had an anonymous donor that allowed us to do this. And the equipment was given to a very seasoned career environmental metering specialist. He's been doing it for 40 years, 20 years for the government. Very intelligent, knows what he's doing. We supplied the meters to him. He's also in Northern California. And the metering is really straightforward. It measures what's coming down in milliwatts per centimeter squared. And one thing with the metering, Jeff, it's perhaps by design, they do not readily make available in the market any meters that measure UVB separately from UVA. So this is one of the reasons why this goes undetected, and certainly all the agencies are structured not to show how radical a UV we're being exposed to. But so we had to buy two separate meters. We had to buy one that measures the combination of UVA and B, and you can't delineate between the two. So the combination UVA-B readings are taken, and then we have to measure UVA separately and back it out of the equation. And this is what we're standing on right now for our data, because we believe that we have archival data of UV readings going back quite a ways, but we believe that data is not accurate, that it has been falsified. So we can't count on that as any accurate baseline. So the only thing we have that we can solidly stand on right now is this. We are told by all major metering or monitoring agencies like World Health Organization, like NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, that no more, this is the critical part of the equation, so people should listen to this, no more than 5% of total UV should be UVB. Of the total equation of UV A and B combined, no more than 5% should be UVB. What our readings are showing clearly is that we're in the range of 60 to 70% is UVB. And this is a very solid part of the equation. Now, some agencies tell us that no more than 1% should be UVB, which would make the math even much more dire. But we're trying to be conservative, and even the way we have done the math on this, you know, we could back into this from a different direction, taking the total UVA, taking 5% of that, and then dividing that into the total UVB we have, the math becomes much worse still. So when we say that it's the UVB readings appear to be 12 to 1,400% higher than what we've been told, we're being very conservative with that math. You asked about UVC, Jeff, and this is what all major monitoring agencies, governmental agencies, all of them say conclusively, that all UVC is blocked 100,000 feet up into the atmosphere, that we are not supposed to see any UVC in the surface of the planet. Now, to explain these frequencies to people, it's measured in nanometer bandwidths. So if you look at a scale from the top down, 400 being at the top, and at 100, moving down the scale, 100 is X-ray. So the farther down the scale you go, the worse it gets. UVA is from 400 to 315 nanometers, going down the scale from 400 at the top. At 315 to 280, you have UVB, a much more lethal bandwidth. Below UVB, you have UVC. UVC is from 280 nanometer bandwidth to 100. At 100 is an X-ray. So, again, we are told that no more than 5% of total UV that hits us is UVB,
mm-hmm.
and our metering shows, again, it can be in the range from 50 to 70%. So it's astronomically higher than we're being told. Bark being burned off the trees, leaves are falling off the trees, they're discolored, and as if it was late fall right now. There's leaves in areas blowing around the parking lot like it was late fall, and we, you know, haven't hardly dipped below 100 degrees here all summer, and people are having extreme difficulty growing gardens, producing anything. The tomato plants won't grow. If they manage to get them to grow, they don't produce anything. All of these are symptoms that we would expect with excessive UVB specifically, and we're seeing it. I mean, gardens don't produce, trees aren't growing, they're dying, dead branches sticking out everywhere. The oaks have about half their normal foliage. The trees try to drop that foliage because they simply can't take the intensity. All this is well documented as an expected effect of excessive UVB, and we see it.
So listeners know, the UV rays you don't feel on your skin, the infrared, the heat that you feel from the sun is in the infrared spectrum. As you'll hear in this upcoming interview with Dr. John Hall, it was an unexpected discovery regarding vitamin D uptake. And as an anesthesiologist, Dr. Hall had patients coming in who were in their 20s working in the sun all day. He would test for vitamin D levels, and it would be not 2%, 5%, 50%, but it would be zero. It would be zeroed out. And he's fully aware of the aerosol operations. And I asked him, as you'll hear later in this interview, if it was connected with the aerosol operations. And he says, I don't see any other way it couldn't be that.
Right now, Jeff, as we mentioned off the air, there's a tremendous amount, unprecedented amount of high-latitude forest fires burning, some 170 in Siberia,
mm-hmm.
burning all around the Arctic Circle. Again, the UV up there, is, we think, is much worse still because we do have some satellite imagery of the ozone hole. It's massive over the northern hemisphere, and nobody's reporting on any of this. It's virtually going completely unmentioned.
Also, for newer listeners, the effects of the geoengineering, the weather control operations, specifically the aerosol operations, and its effect on the ozone layer. And you have evidence that there is an effect from the aerosol operations to the ozone layer, which is allowing this UVB onto the surface.
We know this. I mean, again, the UV readings on the surface are off the charts. And the science data to conclude that aerosols in the upper atmosphere destroy ozone is absolutely immense. I mean, there's people should just Google that. I don't want anybody to take my word. Google geoengineering destroys ozone, the ozone layer, and you'll find studies from many major science institutions to conclude that. Of course, these institutions don't admit it's happening. They don't admit it's already, the destruction is already well underway. They're all funded in one form or another by the establishment. But I mean, 2 and 2 equals 4, and that's what we have. We know they're spraying. We have the material in the ground. We have solar obscuration that we know is a result of the sprayed particulates, and we have a shredded ozone layer now that fits hand in glove with what we would expect with these aerosol operations. So it's really impossible to deny at this point, Jeff. We have film of KC-10s, KC-135 spraying at altitude. I mean, anybody who denies this simply doesn't want to look at the truth or hasn't done any investigation.
What's next for you, Dane, right now?
We're going to focus on the UV issue because once that's widely known, it's really impossible to hide. Our website did get taken down within about 15 minutes of posting our data.
Oh, yeah, I wanted to mention that. Tell us about this.
Got taken down straight away. We thought it might, so we had an email ready to go out to everybody, and we were so grateful for the support we had and everybody posting that data to get it out far and wide quickly. Over the next few days from this original post, which is a week ago Monday, so it's about a week and a half ago, our site was taken down, I think, a total of 8 times, and the server didn't have any acceptable explanation for this, and we had to switch servers to something more secure. We had to pull some other net people in to help us who offered their support very graciously. And we've never had anything happen like this before. Happened 8 times. It's, you know, I can only connect it up with this issue, because once the UV is well known, once this issue is really out in the open and people start to realize why their plants won't grow, why their trees are dying, why the sun feels like it's burning the hell out of them, pretty hard to hide that. So we're going to try to really focus on getting that data out there. And even for those that are skeptical of the geoengineering, which there's plenty of those skeptical people around still who just, again, don't want to face that, can't hide from the fact that this ozone depletion is there and it's doing horrific damage. So if we can just get that part out in the open, I think it will open the door to those that are still denying geoengineering.
Dane Wigington with geoengineeringwatch.org, the site that was taken down multiple times after posting the article on UVB about a week and a half ago. Dane, thank you so much for doing this work and being on In Other News.
Thank you for all you do to help us bring attention to this issue, Jeff. The name of that article, by the way, is Geoengineering is Shredding the Ozone Layer. Very straightforward.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeff. Bye.
We continue the discussion on psychotronic weapons, stalking, mind control, with returning guest Dr. John Hall. He's the author of the book A New Breed, Satellite Terrorism in America. Dr. Hall is an anesthesiologist and will be coming out with a new book soon titled Guinea Pigs, Technology of Control. This book details the non-consensual experimentation ongoing in the United States and abroad, using electromagnetic technology designed to control the human organism. We've covered in depth similar topics on this show with guests such as Amy Worthington, Don Croft, and Dr. Konstantin Kordkov. These guests have pointed out the vulnerability of microwave radiation on the body. For example, that 24 hours of cell phone use is equivalent to 1,600 chest x-rays, and that wireless radiation opens the blood-brain barrier. The Russian government has warned pregnant mothers not to use cell phones. And Dr. Kordkov mentioned that in Russia, it's forbidden to have schools, farms, and buildings under high-intensity electrical wires. Our guest, Dr. Hall, will explain the adverse physiological effects from electromagnetic beam targeting, and that there is a constant breach in the private domain of human consciousness from this type of wireless technology. Dr. John Hall, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jeff, how's it going? It's been a while.
Right, it has been a while. I think last December you were on talking about the Columbia newspaper that reported on the Russian president, his endorsement of a psychotronic weapons program.
Yeah, and things have kind of opened up a little further now that Snowden has kind of come forward with some of the NSA secrets on their full-spectrum surveillance programs, and hopefully there'll be more to come out as he releases some more of his records.
Well, I wanted to talk with you about that as well. I'm not sure if this was disinformation, but there was a story that reported on Ed Snowden. He's a whistleblower. He requested a Faraday cage.
Yeah, and I saw, if you saw when he did some of his interviews, he had the reporters that talked to him came in and he had them put their cell phones in a refrigerator that he had in the room. So, yeah, I think he definitely is aware that, you know, they've got the technology to look and listen through the camera on the phone and the microphone on the phone. So it wouldn't surprise me that he is asking for one. And if you know, my gut feeling is that this probably isn't disinformation since he's seeking asylum. And that would certainly be reason for him to ask for a Faraday cage if he's, you know, hoping to escape, you know, some of the torture that may be coming his way from electromagnetic weaponry.
It may validate a lot of your research, Dr. Hall, because you've been on your own for a number of years and treating victims of psychotronic weapon attacks, stalking, and mind control. Have you seen a change in public reception of your work?
Actually, and funny you should mention that, as soon as he released some of his information, I went into the office the next day, and one of our administrators that runs our office came in, and she sat down, and she asked me if I had heard some of the releases coming forward that Snowden had released, and I said yes, and she said, you know what? She goes, I remember when your book first came out. She goes, there was a lot of us thought you had just gone crazy. She goes, but looking at it now, I think you're just ahead of the curve. So, you know, at least in that instance, and, you know, in kind of like other radio shows like yours, there has been a groundswell of people wanting me to come on and talk about things now that this little tip of the iceberg has came out. And it is really, what he released is something that I think most of us already kind of knew or kind of figured. But, you know, to the major media, the main networks, it seemed like a revelation, which I'm real sure why that is, because, you know, even the non-targeted individuals, just the regular public that kind of keeps up with technology, most of them kind of, it really came as no surprise that they're screening all of our text messages and all of our emails. So,
right. I wanted to ask you about the resistance from the mainstream media and being called a conspiracy theorist and paranoid in the past. How regular was that? How did it affect you?
Well, you know, personally, it really doesn't affect me too much. If you really study the mainstream media, our mainstream media here is basically propaganda for the government. They report what they're told they can report. I've even talked to several radio show hosts that have called me to speak on certain topics and have been told ahead of time, well, you can't talk about this, you can't talk about that, you can mention this, you can mention that. And one of them, I asked him straight out, I said, well, you know, why is that? I mean, you're doing your own show. And he's like, well, the parent corporation that handles the radio station, you know, doesn't want us to talk about the Bilderbergs or a one world government or, you know, other certain topics. So, I mean, that was proof enough that what's being allowed out in the major media is relatively controlled. And especially when you look at CNBC, MSNBC, NBC, any of the major ones, even Fox News to a great extent, which is just a more right-wing version of the same propaganda, is controlled by the government. So, you know, that if you're really just watching the major media to have any informed knowledge or make any informed decisions on knowledge that's being shared, you're really kind of limiting yourself. Unfortunately, most of the alternative news that gets billed as conspiracy theory or conspiracy news probably is a little closer to the smoking gun than most people imagine and is probably actually informing you a little bit better as far as about the technology and the true facts about certain things. So I think it's been a revelation because I think a lot of people have seen that, you know, the conspiracy theorists are actually probably dealing more with conspiracy fact.
Indeed. What I find fascinating about this topic is the human effects of these psychotronic weapons and the targeting of specific areas of the body and what it does to human beings on a social level. You know, yes, there's experimentation involved here and just harassment, but it also seems that the people who are behind this technology and harassment and stalking are trying to stop people from thinking clearly, from being effective activists, from being effective communicators. Am I off on this?
Oh, well, not at all. And if you've seen, I don't know if you remember, over the past year and a half or so, there's been a number of instances where reporters reporting on particularly sensitive topics kind of all of a sudden went into a tirade of kind of gibberish or non-speak, you know, where they were jumbling the words and using wrong words. And when those people were talked to afterwards, you know, they were like, I don't know. I just, all of a sudden, I was trying to do the story and words were coming out of my mouth and I couldn't control them and didn't know what I was saying. And that happened in three or four instances. You know, of course, those reporters were from major media networks, but reporting on sensitive topics. They were taken to the hospital to be checked out. Of course, it was blamed on transient ischemic attack or migraine disease, which, you know, I'm a physician. I do anesthesia and pain management. I see plenty of migraine disease and plenty of people that have had TIAs, and usually they don't, you know, go into tirades of gibberish as far as their speech. They may have slurred speech, but it's usually still appropriate speech. And I don't know if you remember seeing some of those clips. I'm sure you did.
I did, actually.
Yeah, doing the type of show you do. But, you know, that looked to me like that was controlled speech. That's one way they can control. And, of course, you know, the people who they view as activists, you know, or radicals, I mean, not only is it controlling mindset or emotions, but it's also just straightforward attack. So they're more occupied with what's happening to their bodies and how they're being attacked and are unable to pursue their activism.
I had a friend recently, an influential activist, father, husband, who had gone through a very odd experience where he had violent thoughts and suspected that, you know, this was not normal, and all of a sudden it stopped by the middle of the afternoon. Somebody would think he was crazy if he brought this material out, even though you can actually find patents on these types of technology. You start to say, hey, you know, a satellite could be doing this, or it's HARP, or it's this or that. How common is that in your research?
Well, that's pretty common, and that's actually an attempt at control. And that's the sort of thing they do with the Jared Loughners of the world. That's, you know, when you put those kind of thoughts in someone's head and it's not audibly a foreign voice that's talking to you, you know, communicating with you, but just a thought that seems like it could be your own thought, you know, a lot of people will act on those thoughts. Obviously, your friend probably already knew a little bit about this type of technology and realized that, you know, he was having thoughts placed, but so he, you know, he kind of snapped to it and realized what was being done and just ignored them. But, you know, a lot of, you know, common people who maybe don't know much about this technology will act on those thoughts that they place there. And then you get the Jared Loughners and the, you know, the Sandy Hook or the theater shooting in Colorado. And those are attempts at control. And those attempts work in a lot of cases. And that technology and that type of control has been well proven.
I wanted to get into that area a little bit. What are the effects on the human body from some of this technology, and is it always coming from a satellite? I found a map on a Canadian website titled Psychoelectronic Weapon Effects, and it's got a drawing of a human body, and with arrows pointing to different parts of the body, from the ears to the chest area to the hands, artificial tinnitus ringing in the ears, forced movement of jaw and clacking of teeth, microwave hearing, vivid controlled dreams, sudden violent itching inside the eyelids, things like that are some of the symptoms. Getting into the shooters of these particular rampages, what type of technology do you think was being used on them?
Well, definitely control technology. You know what, I wish I could talk to the kid that shot up the theater, because at least from what I've heard from some of the sources that have actually had people talk to him, you know, he came to outside that theater and didn't even realize he was there and didn't remember doing anything he did. And typically when you see that type of Manchurian candidate type of assault or programming, once you're snapped back to your normal personality, your non-alternate personality, you know, you have no memory of what the alternate personality has said or done. And again, you know, that's been well documented. Colin Ross, a psychiatrist here in Texas who works with a lot of the former MKUltra victims, you know, has shown that that can be done very successfully with hypnosis. A lot of the CIA studies have shown that can be successfully done with hypnosis, you know, prior to them figuring out how to actually achieve the same effect using electromagnetic weaponry or electromagnetic effects to the brain. So, I mean, I think most of them, that was probably not done by torturing them or physically hurting them and coercing them to do it as much as it was done by giving them an alternate personality. But now the Sandy Hook shooting thing, mm-hmm. you know, I'm kind of still out on exactly what to think there. That kid was essentially an untrained shooter. And coming from Texas, and I mean, I'm a gun collector, I'm a hunter, mm-hmm. Have been around firearms all my life, and am a pretty good shooter. For someone untrained to walk into a school and shoot essentially a bunch of squirming, moving targets that successfully with that type of accuracy with any type of weapon just seems unlikely. Even the most skilled shooter has a hard time hitting moving targets, and I imagine the minute the shooting started that those kids would have been squirming and running around and moving around, and that seemed more like the work of a trained shooter, not a kid who had been to the range a couple of times with his mother.
That entire event is just filled with inaccuracies and anomalies that are constantly raising questions to this day. And I don't think really many people have a good handle on what exactly transpired. I wanted to also ask you about some of your work in treating the victims of psychotronic weapons, stalking, and mind control, specifically in the stalking area, the gang stalking and things like that. Now, I know you had written about your ex-fiancé experiencing that type of harassment in your book, A New Breed, Satellite Terrorism in America. Do people often come to you asking for advice and help as a result of stalking in their lives?
Just about every day. And what I wish that these people would kind of figure this out and contact me while the stalking is still active and going on. Unfortunately, by the time I hear from most of these victims, it's when they've already been stalked for 6 months to a year. The electronic harassment has started, is in full effect, and a family member or someone at their work has forced them into a psychiatric evaluation when they've pleaded for help or, you know, confided in someone that it's going on. The best point to stop this is when the stalking begins. This is kind of done in stages, usually starts with the stalking. The physical attack usually begins later. That's why most of us that are dealing with this think that the stalking not only is a psychological warfare operation, but it's also done to GPS you by vicinity in order to get your EEG or your brainwaves mapped out, which is how we think most of this is being done, is through EEG monitoring or remote neural monitoring. And they put someone in your vicinity 24/7 in order to GPS you long enough to get you cataloged essentially into the program. Because if you look at most of these victims, the stalking lasts for several months, is severe, and then it tapers off and you're left with just electronic attack and minimal stalking. So I think there's a twofold reason for the stalking, the psychological abuse, and to get you cataloged. And if you could kind of come to the realization that it's happening early on in the stalking, you might actually be able to get some law enforcement help, because they usually will take stalking seriously as long as you're not mentioning the rest of the electronic attack that not many people know about or not many people believe. So the best time to actually put it all to an end is to identify the stalkers early on and have them dealt with, as long as you're in a city where possibly not everybody's in on it. Now, if you're in a small town and your local law enforcement is part of the problem, then that's not going to be of any help either. But in a large city, usually they have certain officers that are picked out that are part of the problem, but for the most part, the entire PD isn't. So that would be my best advice there, and that's what I tell the victims that contact me.
Our guest is Dr. John Hall, author of the book A New Breed, Satellite Terrorism in America. We'll be right back after this break. We'll be right back. you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Dr. John Hall. He's an anesthesiologist and author of the book, A New Breed, Satellite Terrorism in America.
Most of our states have stalking laws now that are relatively good. If you can get plate numbers, get pictures, it's not illegal to take photos of somebody that's stalking you out in public and present the stalking to the police without mentioning the rest of the array of the topic, and you might actually get help law enforcement-wise. Once it's electronic harassment mostly, then you're kind of stuck with trying to deal with some EEG modification and things like that to minimize the effect.
In your book, A New Breed, you also talked about visualization techniques for some of the victims who are having psychotronic weapons directed at them. Can you describe how that can help and what these techniques are?
Well, that's actually a kind of a poor man's way of doing bio-neurofeedback. And that's why I tried to mention it in the most simplistic way I knew to describe it. The way this technology works is it operates off of your brain centers. So what they're actually monitoring is the auditory center and the visual cortex of the brain. That's being decoded back into sound and live pictures. So what they're seeing is a electronically decoded form of what's going on in your brain. So they're seeing what you're seeing and they're hearing what you're hearing. It's also called synthetic telepathy. It's been worked on at several universities. It's currently being worked on at the University of Irvine for soldiers to communicate thought to thought to each other in the field rather than just unidirectionally from a satellite link up down to one recipient. So this is pretty well elucidated technology. Since they're picking up what is in your brain, not physically what you're seeing, but how your brain's interpreting it, if you change in your brain what you're hearing or what you're seeing artificially, then they're going to still pick up what's being registered at the brain level, not at the retina level, I guess would be the best way to describe it. So even though if you're driving and you're looking at the car in front of you, if you start visualizing that, and I used in my illustration in the book, I think Godzilla, that's actually what you're seeing, then they're going to pick up what the brain is registering, not what the optic nerves are registering.
Mm. I guess you can really evolve and try to master these techniques. And even though you say it's a poor man's version, what would be another version that...
Well, what we're using now to actually, and you only have to alter the EEG slightly to avoid this type of technology or to lessen this type of technology.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we're using two programs fairly successfully with a lot of the victims. One of them is called Neuroprogrammer 3, and one of them for people that have an iPad or an iPhone is an app called Brainwaves by Banzai Labs. And you basically put your earphones into your iPad or your computer, and you listen to a binaural beat program while you're sleeping. You actually put it in, and you go to sleep listening to this. And this will alter the EEG ever so slightly and synchronize the two hemispheres of the brain to actually operate simultaneously within the same frequency of EEG. And you only have to alter it a little bit to throw off the targeting. So because it's, from what it's been described to me, it's one particular of the area of the brain wave that they target with a hit. Essentially, they put a marker on this one particular brain wave part. And every time that comes up, then you get restruck. So that's actually the way you're targeted. And if you can alter that brainwave, then you actually lessen the targeting.
That in particular is actually quite fascinating. Is this a new technology that you've been looking at?
We've been looking at it for a while because we were trying, different methodologies of blocking it or shielding from it. And, shielding is real difficult when it comes to shielding ELF waves. Even most Faraday cages won't shield ELF waves unless they're specially built to shield them. I mean, they go through everything. ELF waves actually pass through the earth. And we think that most of this is being done through extremely low frequency waves and possibly scalar waves, which are also difficult to shield. Mm. So the other alternative was to find ways, to alter the brain to where it's not as easily targeted. And that's actually been one of our better solutions. And, of course, the ultimate solution is going to be full exposure and education. I mean, once the general population as a whole understands that this technology exists, then you won't see near the victimization that you've seen. People may still get tortured with it physically, but it, you know, a lot of what's so detrimental to these victims isn't even so much the physical torture is that no one believes them. They end up being parked in front of a psychiatrist. The psychiatrist won't look at any of the research. They're more interested in just fitting you into the DSM-4 or 5 criteria, diagnosing you with a mental illness and, you know, putting you on meds and roping you into monthly $300 an hour appointments. Psychiatry tends to be mostly financially driven in this country. So,
right. There are very few psychiatrists with the patient's best interests in mind. We know a few. We've had them on the show a couple times. I wanted to ask you if you would recommend any type of measuring device that could detect this type of technology that would show you evidence that you or someone is being targeted.
Yeah, there are electromagnetic detectors that'll pick it up. You know, the problem that most victims have had with that, and we have had a lot of people who have convincing evidence of, you know, finding, you know, various electromagnetic frequencies being shot into their homes. The problem is when you try to go use that as evidence, they're going to say, well, you know, this is, you know, coming from a local radio station or a TV station, or it's typical and it's environmental electromagnetic pollution. It tends to be the way it's written off. There's still, even though you detect it in your home, there's still no direct proof that it's coming from somebody using it intentionally to affect you. So, you know, that's kind of the reason, other than scanning people for implants, which, you know, some people are still implanted. Most of us don't feel that an implant is necessary to do this type of harassment.
Mm-hmm.
But for people that it's been going on a decade or longer, you know, there have been individuals that have found to be implanted with a tracking chip and are, again, that would strictly be for the tracking part of it and probably isn't actually taking part in any of the physical changes the people are experiencing.
If you could update us on the group Freedom from Covert Harassment and Surveillance and your interaction with them.
Yeah, they're still in existence and growing exponentially. You know, still trying to have as many educational activities as they can. There's also another group that I'm affiliated with called ICAACT, or ICAACT, International Consensus Against Covert Technologies. That's ran by Jesse Beltran out of Sacramento, California. Some of the scanning that I initially was doing and people to find chips, they've kind of taken to the next level, have actually made a lot of strides in the EU. A lot of people being victimized in Europe, to the point where the European Union and European Parliament has taken a lot of interest in some of the work we've been doing through ICAACT. I know Jesse took a group over there to Belgium and had access to a governmental Faraday cage and did scanning of victims that we think suspect are chipped in the Faraday cage. Did this under good scientific control, had control people who were not victims, who weren't experiencing any symptoms, and took victims who were experiencing symptoms. And even within the Faraday cage, the victims still were shown to transmit on RF scan, and the controls weren't transmitting. And that's within a fairly good, well-made Faraday cage. And I believe ICAACT is going to be releasing that study publicly here pretty soon. Because I know some of the victims in the EU have gone to Parliament. Parliament's taken a big interest in it. Several members of Parliament, as I recall, were actually being victimized and were found to be positive on RF scan. So that's actually a big step, because this is clear as day and it's on video, where, you know, you walk up to the control person, scan them all over. There's nothing showing up on the RF meter. You walk over to the victim, and they're actually transmitting at several different sites within a Faraday cage. So, I mean, even for the non-believer, that should be fairly convincing. Now, they did come up with some obscure pseudoscience study out of Thailand somewhere that said that, well, you know, the human body has been found to actually transmit some radio frequencies on its own. But, I mean, these are very, very, very faint transmissions that come out of the body naturally and are not in the same frequency that we're picking up on RF scan.
Were they able to extract any of these chip implants?
There is one of the victims in Belgium, I think, has had an extraction done. Even I haven't seen the lab work or the physical studies on what was extracted yet, but I know he did have an extraction. Of course, Bob Boyce was an inventor, is an inventor in Georgia, works with electromagnetics. I don't know if you had ever heard his story. He invented a way to recharge batteries using free energy, and the NSA took a very big interest in that technology. He was taken out to lunch by an agent and noticed a foreign frequency in the chamber, radio frequency free chamber where he did his electronic work. Subsequently, he noticed a lump on his shoulder and came up positive on scan and did have a Verichip removed, I believe, from his shoulder and his flank that had been put there surreptitiously.
So the lump was scar tissue building?
Well, in his case, the lump turned out to be melanoma. And that's one of the side effects, particularly of, you know, at least they found in some studies of Verichip, was that in certain individuals, they'll respond with melanoma changes to the covering of the chip. And in his case, it was a melanoma that developed around the chip.
That's fascinating because that is one of the problems with chipping your pets.
But yeah, as possible cancer changes, yeah. And definitely that is what happened to Bob Boyce. And I mean, for any of your listeners that are interested, if you Google Bob, B-O-Y-C-E, Bob Boyce, his story is, you know, is there. Now, last I heard, his attorneys had the chips. That I think the chip did come back to a lot number that was sold to the U.S. government, and I don't know how they've pursued it since then.
What laws are in place right now in states and internationally to protect people? We've done shows on human intention, and there's a Russian scientist, Dr. Korotkov, who measured human intention in water, showing how sensitive human beings are and our environment to things such as microwaves and particle beams. There's a steady breach within the human mind, a steady assault using microwave beam technology and other devices. Is there any kind of basic protection, human right protection, from this technology that uses microwaves that have been found now to be linked directly to adverse physiological effects on humans?
No, as of yet that I know of, there is none. And that's, you know, a lot of that's governmentally controlled and through the IEEE. I would like to see some rules against it, but unfortunately, for every study that shows that there's harmful effects, the appropriate agencies come up with another study that says there's not. If you look at the amount of microwave that's labeled as safe for human exposure, it's much lower in the Soviet, in Russia and in Europe than it is here. Actually, the United States has one of the higher safety level ratings, you know, for microwave energy. And, you know, and not only from victims being attacked with it, but I'm convinced that the exponential rise we're seeing in type 2 diabetes is going to be eventually found to be linked to electromagnetic pollution because, you know, we're seeing, you know, type 2 diabetes in the non-obese, you know, it used to be written off as, you know, dietary problems and from obesity and because we're eating too much fast food. But we're seeing more and more people come in depleting their vitamin D3 levels with high sugars and needing to go on oral hypoglycemic agents or sometimes insulin to control their sugars, and they're relatively healthy and fit people. And I think there's been several studies that have linked electromagnetic exposure to type 2 diabetes. As that's researched more, I think we're going to find that we've polluted the environment with electromagnetics and with whatever's being sprayed into the environment to the point that in the combination of our skin not being able to produce vitamin D and being bombarded with non-ionizing radiation 24/7 is probably going to be found to be the culprit for the increase in diabetes.
Mm, that's very fascinating. I'd like to know some of the symptoms of type 2 diabetes, but also we know that lack of sunlight does have an effect on certain cancers, such as breast cancer and pancreatic cancer. And autism, I heard as well, is another effect of a lack of vitamin D3 and sunlight. We often talk about the geoengineering operations on this show and the solar radiation management, which manufactures man-made clouds to block certain frequencies of the sun. So I think there's definitely a link there. But I wanted to ask you if you can identify just a few of those symptoms from type 2 diabetes that could be related to electromagnetic saturation of the environment.
Well, early on, you know, type 2 diabetes, that's why it's so dangerous. It's kind of insidious. You may not even find it unless you're going in for routine blood work or having your cholesterol and your sugar checked as part of a routine health maintenance type plan. After it goes along unchecked, you're going to notice polydipsia, which is an increased thirst, polyuria, which is finding yourself, you know, drinking more and going to the restroom more. Then you'll start to see some weight gain increases. A lot of times you'll actually have episodes of low blood sugar or that shaky, weak feeling because your sugar is low, you know, as your insulin is trying to find a spot where it's supposed to regulate itself. Believe it or not, hypoglycemia or extremely low blood sugar is one of the initial symptoms of diabetes. So a lot of people are thinking that they have low blood sugar when in reality it's just their pancreas trying to figure out how much insulin it's supposed to produce for the sugar loads that are going up and down in the body. So those are really kind of the main symptoms, but usually you find it when people come in for a health check and, you know, your normal fasting blood sugar should be, you know, 100 or less, you know, and we're seeing, you know, 150, 200, 210, 300. And then you check their vitamin D levels and they'll be non-existent. And the CDC has even addressed that the absence of vitamin D in the human population is at a national emergency. You know, we're checking a lot of people routinely for vitamin D now. And even people who work out in the sun all day long are coming in with zero levels of vitamin D. And vitamin D is a strong component of sugar metabolism in humans, along with heart function and brain function and memory. And it almost works more like a hormone or a cofactor than a vitamin.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, and if you put them back on some vitamin D3, and sometimes their sugar metabolism will normalize out, sometimes not. Within my practice, mild type 2 diabetes or slight elevations in blood sugar, in the absence of D3 on testing, you know, we treat that with vitamin D3 and cinnamon. And usually, you know, can get the sugars back down to normal levels just with those two agents and not have to resort to one of the pharmacologics. The problem with the medicines that we're using pharmacologically or pharmaceutically for type 2 diabetes, it's kind of a double-edged sword with those. Yes, they control your sugar, but they also cause weight gain. So it ends up being a never-ending cycle. You bring the sugar down, but you raise the weight, which brings the sugar up. You need a little more medicine. It causes a little more weight gain. That brings the sugar up. You need a little more medicine. So I usually, at least in my practice, try to treat it naturally at first, unless I just absolutely can't bring it down with dietary change, replacement of vitamin D3, and cinnamon.
Oh, cinnamon. Is it organic cinnamon or any just...
Yeah, it's organic cinnamon. It comes in a capsule as a medical cinnamon. It's usually about 2,000 milligrams of cinnamon mixed with chromium in a capsule. And that's very common at most better vitamin stores.
That's really good information, Dr. Hall. Really appreciate that. Going back to that statement you made about the person being in the sun, working in the sun, but with almost zero vitamin D, is that related to the saturation of electromagnetics in our environment?
Actually, it could be, but I also think that might be from some of the aerial spraying. You know, you don't have to block the sun entirely to not stimulate the skin to produce vitamin D3. You just have to block the right frequency of light to do that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, even though it may still appear to be a nice sunny day, if there's enough aluminum or whatever else they're spreading in the atmosphere up there to block that one frequency that those cells respond to, then they're not going to produce. I mean, that's the only logical explanation. I don't think over the last 50 years that humans have evolved to not produce D3. I think the right frequency of light is being blocked from us to be able to produce it.
It's really interesting that you're mentioning this now. I had done a presentation with Long Island Skywatch not long ago, and that was one area that I focused in on is vitamin D3 and health effects from lack of vitamin D3. It just goes on and on and on, especially with bone formation, preventing certain cancers. Autism was related to the lack of that. We're not advocating sunbathing, and if you take too much vitamin D3, especially if you're older, that can have harmful effects as well. But the fact that you had mentioned certain frequencies being blocked by the aerosol operations that we often talk about on this show, I dug for information online about this. I couldn't find a thing. Is there any resource that you had looked at to come to some of these observations?
Not at all, Jeff. That's just my personal belief, because that's the only thing it can be. You know, I mean, that is how we produce vitamin D, is through the skin, and it is supposed to be produced with light exposure. So, I mean, I'm sure if you dug, you could probably find it somewhere. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, when you see people who are in their 20s, young and healthy, working as day workers or landscapers and in the sun all day, and they come in and they test with a zero vitamin D level, and I've seen that, zero vitamin D level, and they're sick, because when you run out of vitamin D, it affects everything. I mean, they come in, you know, no energy, I'm tired, my muscles hurt, you know, my memory's gone, you know, and I'm 25 years old, then there's something going on. And the only logical thing would be that we're not getting the right frequency of light to stimulate that production. And, I mean, that would be a study that someone should do. And I mean, that would be a safe bet on a study to find that it is going to be positive.
One other piece of information I did find was that heart disease that could be prevented from vitamin D3, the vitamin D3 source must come from the sunlight and not a supplement, which I thought was interesting as well, just, again, pointing to the value of the natural frequencies of the sun and sunlight.
And that's true, because we found that, you know, even when you replace vitamin D3 with a supplement, it takes a long time to rebuild that up. The body doesn't receive it or incorporate it when it's an exogenous substance as well as your own. And that's why, you know, especially for your listeners, if they're suspecting that, I would recommend they go to their doctor and ask to have their vitamin D level checked before they go on vitamin D supplements. Because if it's zero, I mean, we routinely start those people on 50,000 units a week, you know, for 4 to 6 weeks, and then put them on a daily dose of 2,000 to 5,000 IUs a week. But if you're zero, it is so hard to replenish those stores that you really need to be on the high-dose prescription version of the D3, at least to get it back in the ballpark.
Dr. John Hall, I know you're working on another book titled Guinea Pig, Non-Lethal Technologies. How's that coming along?
Actually, it's coming real well. The book's essentially finished. I don't know if you remember me telling you on our last meeting that I was going through some censorship issues. The local FBI down here, who hated the fact that I released the first book, really hated the fact that I'm releasing a second book that deals a lot with the technology. So there was a lot of harassment going on, documents being stolen out of my vehicle and out of my home to try to do the writing. They finally got around to asking straight out to censor and redact some of the information in the book. That's all been done, and it's currently in typing, and hope to have it on shelves, hopefully, by January 2014, if not before.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, great. Did the request by agencies such as the FBI go through the publisher to want you to redact information?
Well, it didn't even go as far as the publisher. It came straight to me and to view the rough draft, because some of the information I used was documents that I had to get through classified means to write. So they wanted the right to look it over and see if any of it need to be redacted, which they did. But that was after actually having my typist harassed by the local FBI office here and having documents stolen out of my vehicle and stolen out of my house and computers tampered with. I mean, there's been a concerted effort to prevent this book from coming out, but I think we finally got it down where it's, I mean, it's being typed on an Apple computer that stays with the typist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good job. The other thing is I saw online that you're looking for people to help out for a movie version of this book. Is that also true?
Yeah, we've been lucky enough. There's a screenplay that's been written on A New Breed. Edmund Drillet, which is an excellent producer out of California, he did Banksters, which was a movie about Bernie Madoff. It had Tom Sizemore and Rachel Ward. He's also done several other El Padrino. That, him, in conjunction with Mike Muirhead with Bandera Films out of Texas, are doing a movie, not a documentary, but an actual drama based on a true story on A New Breed, which we're hoping to get out. I believe they've got a website set up for any victims who would want to donate or contribute to the movie. We would appreciate it.
Dr. John Hall, author of the book, A New Breed, Satellite Terrorism in America. How do listeners get in contact with you if something is going on with them in terms of electronic harassment, stalking, things like that?
The best way is through my website at satweapons.com, satweapons.com, or at icaact.org.
Dr. John Hall, thank you so much for being on In Other News.
All righty, thank you, Jeff.
That's going to do it for In Other News. See you next week, Monday, 10 p.m. Big thank you to the listeners for supporting the station at this critical time. See you next week, Monday, 10 p.m.